Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Pavone Group and Vigor, a branding and marketing agency for restaurant, beverage, and hospitality brands. Learn more at vigorbranding.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Welcome, Fork Tales fans. The best biscuits in the world are made in the South, of course. And the best place to buy those biscuits is a restaurant called Biscuitville. Today's guest is the chairman of Biscuitville, Bernie Jennings, and we're going to talk about biscuits, family, and a whole lot more. Bernie, thank you so much for joining us. Welcome, and we're looking forward to hearing your story.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate you inviting me to your podcast.
Very cool. So, okay, we'll start sort of in the beginning here. Your father founded Biscuitville in 1966, and you were raised to eventually take over the reins, which you did in 1996. You often joke that your birth date and your hire date are the same date. Talk about that a little bit. Talk about the start and how you got into the business and how you were raised basically in the business.
Sure. So I feel like I was born into the business watching my dad as an entrepreneur, try different things in the restaurant business. He started out with, really a bread store. And he was selling day old bread and, through his travels, and he was also selling flour, as not flowers as in roses, but flour, by the train carload. Wow. And he saw pizza and he thought that was a pretty neat concept. So he started a concept called Pizza to Go. Eventually added biscuits in the morning because it was a slow day part to no day part. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, changed the name to Pizzaville. The biscuits were doing really well. I said, well, let me just see if I can make a go at a biscuit concept without the pizza. And opened up one in downtown Danville, Virginia, called it Biscuitville. And the story goes on from there. Eventually converted all the Pizzavilles over to Biscuitvilles, and we've been growing ever since. But to answer your question, watching my dad go through that, and I remember he used to do his own training videos, and middle of the night, I fell asleep at about 11:30, and he woke me up at 6:30 in the morning when they were doing the videos. And I just feel like I grew up in the business. How did I get into the business? I call myself a late bloomer. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was growing up. I didn't know if I wanted to be in the restaurant business, in the real estate business. Just didn't know. So when I got out of college, I started working for my dad doing odds and end jobs, and eventually worked my way into a restaurant we had called The Cutting Board, which was a steakhouse in Burlington. Mm-hmm. From that started managing a Pizzaville restaurant, and from that went over to the Biscuitville side and really worked every department in the company. I didn't run all the departments, but I got an exposure to that. And around 1996, my dad made me president of the company. But wow. It wasn't like I set out to be in it. But once I started getting a taste of it, I loved it.
That's awesome. So I have a rule, for my daughters, not that they're interested whatsoever in what I'm doing ever, but if they want to get into the business, my rule was you have to work somewhere for 2 years and get one promotion. Did you guys have anything like that? Or is there any kind of rules that you set up that way or anything, to that thing? Or is it just a coincidence? It just happened to work out.
It just happened to work out for me. However, I also learned that rule. Having, I have 4 kids. One of them does work in the company, my oldest son, Blake, and he had to do the same thing. He worked about 5 or 6 years outside of our business before he joined us. And his skill set is real estate development. Did that in Washington, D.C. and Raleigh. But I think that's really important, joining a family business, to have that outside experience before joining. And amen. I'm sure I would have benefited from it.
Yeah. Well, and you know, look, I talk to a lot of folks that are part of family businesses, and you know, it's awesome, right? And there's nothing more important than family, right?
Yeah.
But family owned businesses, I mean, it can be a difficult run. I mean, you know, you and I certainly know of a lot of family businesses where there's turmoil and problems. So to navigate that, I think it's good to have those rules set up out front and you know, you gotta like abide by them, right? I mean, yeah. It's an important thing. So now, is your son, is he going to be, I mean, what is his role right now?
He does a real estate development work, okay. You know, which would include the construction, repairs and maintenance, site selection. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's his job.
Yeah, which is not nothing because you have how many locations? Like 50 plus, right?
Yeah, we're about 79 locations today. Wow. With four, okay. Under construction.
Wow, geez. Yeah. That's fantastic. So I want to take it back to the beginning because I always say there's always these great stories, right? So I love the story. Your ailing grandmother called her grandsons to her bedside, which had been your father, asked them to choose their inheritance. So you want to tell that story?
Yeah. So she gave my dad, since he was the oldest, the choice between the biscuit recipe or the farm. And he chose the biscuit recipe. And my uncle, which was his brother, got the farm.
So how did the farm work out? I mean, was he happy with that trade?
I say my dad, and I think it's just a great story. Interestingly enough, my uncle used to ask me, where's the farm? He still was looking for the farm. It's and my grandparents lived in Eastern Tennessee. And you know, great area. In fact, there's a Jennings Cemetery there. Lots of Jennings there.
Wow. So the farm does exist. Your uncle got the farm. Your uncle ever part of the business?
So when we look at the business side, I mentioned early on that my dad was a flower salesman.
Yep.
That was something that his dad or my grandfather, a business my grandfather had. And that's a business my uncle, who was a younger brother, took over. When my dad got into restaurant business, my uncle did the flower business.
That's funny. Yeah. Does a farm in Tennessee still exist?
No. I mean, it exists, but it's not family owned.
Not in the family. That's funny.
Yeah.
So yeah. I guess without giving away the secret recipe, the thing that your father chose, what's the key to a good biscuit?
Yeah. So my dad was very, very practical, and I'll answer the question. The key to the good the key to a good biscuits is love. And what I mean by that is growing up, my dad was fascinated with chain restaurants, and he told me, look, we all know how to make a McDonald's hamburger. We know the ingredients. It's not about the McDonald's hamburger. It's how they do it. It's the system they put in place. It's the marketing. It's the brand. It's the people. It's the execution. He said, so, you know, when we look at making a good biscuit, it's pretty simple ingredients. It's self-rising flour, shortening, and buttermilk. It's mm-hmm. What do you do with it? How do you market it? How, you know, it's the friendliness. How do you make the people who are buying it feel special? So I call it love. That's how you make a good biscuit.
Yep. Well, you know, Brad, I've known you for a long time and you're very engaging and it's amazing because I can tell you care. And you know, people might be listening saying, oh, okay, right, you make it with love. But like family, not just your family, your company, you see your company as a family. Right. And I think that passion and that caring for people really, really comes through. And I think I commend you for that. And I mean, I just think that's an amazing attribute to you and your company.
Well, thank you.
So, okay. So Biscuitville's made some great headlines in recent years for going against industry trends. And I'm always impressed by things like this. It's hard to stand by, I'll say, your beliefs, if you will. And, you know, I mean, from just being open for breakfast, you know, to you know, all the other things that you do and that you keep sacred, I guess. One of the huge trends, obviously, especially since COVID, was third-party delivery services like Uber Eats, DoorDash, and Grubhub. You are not working with them. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah.
What? And if
I can
there,
expand.
Yeah. I want to hear a little bit about thinking there because I'm intrigued.
Yeah. So it's several things. One, We haven't worked on our packaging so our food can travel well. An example in the restaurant business is French fries. How do you keep a French fry hot and fresh mm-hmm. for 20 minutes while mm-hmm. it's going from your restaurant to be delivered? So our biscuits are best eaten fresh. When we look at our business, we're opened basically 8.5 hours a day, 5:30 to 2 in the afternoon. And we do a lot of business in a short period of time frame. And getting a to-go order, like an Uber Eats order on a 9:30 on a Saturday, doesn't work for us because we're having trouble, you know, taking care of those guests that are in front of us. Mm-hmm. You know, Chipotle, I think, has done a really good job in their restaurants of making a second makeup line just for to-go orders mm-hmm. so that it doesn't mess up their in, you know, their dining. With us, we have the dining room and we have the drive-thru. Drive-thrus went from pre-COVID around 63% of sales to now 75% of sales. Wow. It does seem to be coming off a little bit, but it's holding in that number. So we're doing a tremendous amount of business in a short period of time, and it's part a capacity issue of how do you fit those orders in. So it's on our radar. I think we'll end up solving the packaging and solving some of the back of house stuff, but for right now, it's not top of mind for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you know, going back to like what I was saying earlier about you and the way you. Your personality and everything, you know, you say you make these biscuits with love, but you refuse to sell them through a delivery service because it's not about the delivery service per se. It's more about like the quality of the product that they're going to get at the end of the day. And at the end of the day, that's your brand, right? I mean, you're Biscuitville and, you know, you don't want to have anything happen to that product
right.
that diminishes the experience, the consumer experience.
Yeah, I agree. And I like those delivery services. I use them.
Yep.
Myself. It is definitely not about the delivery service. They're doing a great job in providing a good service.
Yeah. The other thing, and I'm curious about this too, because again, I commend you for it. So I'm not, well, by no means am I questioning it, but 5:30 a.m. To closing at 2. I mean, you know, again, most restaurants out there be like, okay, well that's great for them. What are we going to do for the lunch? You know, we got to make this, we got to make that. What about dinner? We got to make this, we got to make that. I mean, everyone would try and open up as many day parts as they absolutely humanly could. I mean, look at some of the different QSRs, like I'll say like McDonald's. I mean, they're in the basically the dessert business. They're in the coffee business. They're in the
right.
whatever the next trend du jour is. How hard was it for you to stay sort of, for lack of a better word, true to yourself and just do this morning, 5:30 a.m. to closing at 2?
Yeah, so we started out open till 8 o'clock at night. We had bone-on chicken. We added vegetables. We had a lot of different products. And to make a long story short, from about 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 5:30, it was pretty much dead. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the quick service business, people want a great product that's fresh. And you can imagine how it's difficult that is to do that when you really don't have much business between 1 and 5:30. And this was before snacking, you know, the snacking concept and the coffee concepts and people, you know, going to a restaurant in mid-afternoon really existed. So we dropped that day part, started closing at 2. Our food quality went up, our food costs went down, and our employees were much happier. Mm-hmm. So now we call it, when we're hiring, it's called life after 2. So we use that as a selling point to hire people. Now, of course, you need to be a morning person. If you're not a morning person, we're not a good place. We're not a good place for you. You definitely need to be a morning person. Mm-hmm. So that means I'd say the majority of our management team is geared towards closing at 2, being at home with their family, having worked out if they do have a family, who's going to take care of those kids in the morning so they can be there in the afternoon. It's a big decision staying open later, and how many people are you going to lose because that's not what they signed up for.
That's right. And that's very smart of you to look around the corner because let's face it. I mean, I love that life after 2. I think that's super smart. I mean, and again, I say this because knowing you for a while, I could tell that like company culture, you treat everything like family.
Yeah.
And that whole life after 2 plays right into that. So it's not another gimmick, or it's not a, well, we got to worry about our employees. It's something you've always done. And And candidly, I think that's reflected in the quality of the product. You say, you know, the biscuits are made with love. I think that's what, you know, people sign up for this Life After Two, and they're dedicated to you and your brand and the family. I think that's I think that's very commendable and something I think people try to build or create later. But you've always sort of had that incorporated, haven't you?
Yeah. Right.
So, okay, 3/4 of your sales come from drive-through customers. That's in line with most of the fast food industry, which is around 70. Last year, you opened your first drive-through only location. Do you see a lot of potential for more drive-throughs? Is that like maybe the future? Or is it sort of, it's still in the test and learn phase?
Yeah, it's in the test and learn phase. We opened up 8 restaurants last year. All of them had a dining room except for that one that is a test location. And then the next 8, we're planning on the dining room. We found the dining room does add to our return on investment. And we got 25% of our guests coming into the dining room. Now, about 10% of them are taking it to go, but another 15 are eating, you know, are staying in the dining room. So we see it as something here to stay.
Good. Good. So what do you think? What's the best thing on your menu? Other than the biscuit, I think that'd be the obvious answer.
My favorite is sausage, egg, and cheese.
Oh,
with scrambled egg.
Oh, perfect.
No, our sausage is made by Swaggerty. It's a third, I think getting ready to go on a 4th generation family business out of Sevierville, Tennessee, which is right by Dollywood. Uh-huh. And you know, I didn't mention early on, but we really strive to go with local companies first. And if we can't be local, we want them to be family business. Doesn't always work out that way. But, you know, a 4th generation family business for our sausage, a 3rd or 4th generation for bacon coming out of Ohio. You know, our ham is made locally, you know, in Wilkesboro. Mm-hmm. That local or family is really important. Oh, and we just added Community Coffee about 3 years ago, and they're in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Yep.
Great, great family business.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, you know, it's like, you know, some of the things are like the shift to drive-throughs and then, you know, takeout.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that happened. COVID really, you know, moved a lot of that along fast. You know, like we see things like Pizza Hut's practically eliminating dine-in, but it really feels like the Biscuitville brand and just sort of the way you feel about family and the folks, it feels like the dine-in is here to stay as far as Biscuitville, right? I mean, that's like, it feels like that's a really integral part of your brand and your brand promise and the love, the fresh and all that kind of thing.
It is. Yeah. Have no plans on changing it. When we look at this drive-through only test, that's a concept that we would put on a smaller site where we couldn't fit a restaurant with a dining room, but we definitely wanted to be in that market.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
To us, that's an add-on, not a replacement.
Absolutely. So you've got more than 70 locations, as you mentioned, in the Carolinas and Virginia, which is a lot of restaurants not a small area, but a tight footprint. All of your locations are company owned, no franchisees. That gives you a lot of control of the brand, the product. And, but does that limit growth for you as well? And talk about the idea of not franchising versus franchising and the benefits.
Sure. Let's go with the first one. The growth. We just moved into South Carolina 2 years ago, and that's a big part of our growth. 3 years ago, all of our restaurants were within a 2-hour drive of Greensboro, North Carolina, which is our headquarters. Now we're in about a 3.5-hour drive. So we just opened up in Columbia, South Carolina, and Florence, and Hartsville, and one in Newbern, North Carolina. The growth rate is limited. I mean, the being company owned limits your growth rate. Mm-hmm. We don't have an unlimited supply of cash and equity to grow. So you can only grow as fast as the money that you're able to borrow or the money you're able to put into it.
Right.
You could certainly grow faster having private equity come in and buy a big stake, but just not interested in going down that path. Another another way to grow faster is the franchising model. Something I have zero experience with. We may do that one day, but right now we want to own it and control it. And you mentioned it earlier. We feel like it gives us a lot more control over the operations piece.
I think it does. And I think that, and look, we have a lot of brands that are franchised and it's great. They're smart business models, but just again, going back to like how you feel about it. And, you know, you said your biscuits, I love it. In the beginning, they're made with love. Well, that has to, there has to be a extreme amount of control there. So you're not willing to just, ship them out into through a delivery service for quality's sake. You're not willing to just sell your brand to other people and put it in their hands, you know, with the fear that maybe it won't be up to the to your standards. I think there's a whole lot of things that you're doing or you're choosing not to do that are actually making you successful. I think that's really commendable. Yeah. I think it's very difficult to do because, you know, business is business, right? And like, you know, it's about revenue and growth and all that. So I commend you for kind of sticking to your guns, if you will, and doing things the way you do it.
Thank you.
So last year, Biscuitville was voted best fast food breakfast in the in a USA Today readers poll. That's huge. And congratulations on that.
Thank you.
We're seeing a lot of the fast food breakfast wars and they've been raging for a long time. Everyone's kind of getting into it. I mean, that's a huge win for you. What do you attribute that to that win? So you're up against all this competition. You guys are voted number one.
Yeah, for us, in fact, every now and then I'm talking to somebody and they get us confused with Chick-fil-A. And by the way, we're not Chick-fil-A. It's a different concept. But they think we're closed on Sundays. It's, mm-hmm. you know, we have worked hard to put us into a premium QSR category. Mm-hmm. So when we look at how we compare ourselves, certainly we're comparing, we do competition shopping with Chick-fil-A, Bojangles, McDonald's, and Hardee's. And those mm-hmm. are really the core ones in our market. But when we look at our pricing and the quality of the ingredients we're using, we want to make sure we're using better ingredients than they are. Now, granted, an egg is an egg is an egg. You can't do anything different there, but mm-hmm. you can do something different with your bacon, with your sausage, with the, you know, using a center cut ham. You know, the chicken, like our chicken is the Springer Mountain Farms label, which is what you see in high end restaurants. Mm-hmm. It costs us more money. But that's important to us because we think it's a better product. And when you have what we think it, which we know is a better product, you got to charge a premium price for that. So when we look at our pricing, it's not going to be the same. You put our pricing up against any of the people we competition shop with, I tell our folks, it better be higher. It better be more expensive because we're spending more money than they are putting that product in front of the guests.
Absolutely. So we're like, there's obviously a consistent thread here as far as quality, working with family-owned businesses.
Yes.
You know, I'll say smaller types of companies. Where did that come from? I mean, like, is that all you? I mean, was that something instilled by your father? I mean, where did that sort of dedication to, I'll say, family, quality of life for your employees, and clean ingredients and the like? Where did that all come from?
Yeah, I'll give it's a two-part answer. One, on the, you know, ingredient side, we did some research about 10 years ago, and it was internal and external. And what we found, and it was just by chance, being a smaller chain and local chain, we had by chance been dealing with family-owned businesses and local businesses. And many of our customers knew that, but we didn't play on it. Like, we didn't point it out. And we said, wait a minute. This is something, if our customers know about it and care about it, there's probably some who don't know about it, but do care about it. So we made that part of our strategy on a go-forward basis to really focus on local businesses first and family-owned businesses second. And then the second is the how we treat our people. I think that's what you were asking. Mm-hmm. And you know how we operate our business. Part of that is being a family business. I truly believe family businesses approach business and how they treat people different than public companies and different than private equity. Mm-hmm. So, and part of it was my upbringing from my parents on how you treat people and treating people with respect and treating people how you want to be treated. So my team kind of knows this. If there's ever a dilemma when it comes to the people, how do you, if this was you, how do you, how would you like to see the answer?
Right.
And sometimes it's financially, I mean, it hurts us financially, but it, I think we benefit in the long run. So, you know, I try not to be penny wise and pound foolish in making those financial decisions.
You have a strong constitution when it comes to that. And I think I really commend you on it. I think that's wonderful. You know, so you're also voted best regional fast food chain. There's a lot of Southern fast food chains that wanted to win that. Can you talk a little bit about that? Who the competition might have been, and you know why do you think that you guys were picked?
You know, there were several big operators who the competition might have been, and I think they're really good operators. And I've already mentioned them. They got some great franchisees: McDonald's, Bojangles, Hardee's, Chick-fil-A. They're all really, really good competitors and operators. You know, for us, I think we are able to differentiate ourselves in the breakfast space because we close at 2. And we've already talked about that, but people know breakfast is our focus. And I think when you have that type of focus, it does put you in a better position to compete in that space.
Amen. And, you know, I'll say on that focus, and I, you know, I know that I think you kind of answered this in a different way earlier, but I can't help as a marketer and an entrepreneur. I mean, you know, I have one marketing firm that does restaurant marketing, and I have another marketing firm that does CPG, food and beverage, right? Two different companies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you think, well, in my mind, they are very different because, you know, a restaurant is a retail business that just happens to sell food and beverage. And I don't mean that to take that lightly, but CPG is, you know, is what it is. It's branded food that is sold at retail, usually at obviously a grocery store. So different businesses, different business models, they just happen to both be food and beverage. I've been seeing over the years a lot of crossover. And, you know, we have mutual friends that have restaurants on one side, but then they've taken their primary item and they've moved it into the grocery chain. And I got to think with the brand that you have at Biscuitville and the reputation that if you could figure out a way to package up those biscuits and get them in a grocer's freezer, I got to think that's a home run. But can you talk a little bit about that? And I have a feeling it goes back to, like you were saying, fresh, 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 fresh. So can you talk a little bit about that? Have you thought about that? Or is that maybe something on the horizon?
Yeah, it's not on the horizon. We have put very little thought into it. It does go back to, you know, the freshness of the product and how it would reflect on the brand. We may do that one day, and you know, it may be, you know, doing. We have party biscuits. You know, we used to call them silver dollar. They're just small biscuits that you'd see served on a platter or passed around at a party. Something like that would be really good, in my opinion, for, you know, a freezer section in a grocery store.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you see, like some of the guys that, you know, some of the folks have done par-baked. So instead of it being like, for lack of a better word, just a frozen ingredient built product, they'll go so far as to, you know, partially bake it and then freeze it. And I think that makes one heck of a lot better, fresher product. And so that might be an opportunity for you. And hey, look, far be it for me to tell you how to make biscuits. That's the last thing I'm going to do. But from a marketing standpoint, I mean, boy, I gotta tell you, I think you have such a great brand, and it comes down to just because of the fortitude and really focusing on a breakfast segment, the biscuit, a time frame, fresh, and making it with love, that I think is, well, that's what makes great brands. So I think, I think that's awesome. So, I mean, you know, before we go here, like what's next for Biscuitville? What else are you, for lack of a better word, cooking up? Is there new locations? Are you moving into any new areas? What excites you? What's going on at Biscuitville?
You know, it's the growth. We were a very slow growth company. I wouldn't call us a fast growth company, but the new markets is where we're focused. You know, South Carolina, moving into Greenville next year, you know, just expanding in that South Carolina market is really important to us. Hope to get to Georgia one day, but that's a good five or 6 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And, you know, I'm a big trends guy. I mean, you know, at Quench, we do the food and beverage trends and the restaurant trends. I've been doing it for, I think it's like 17 years now. And I will say, I mean, you know, that focus on a product and a focus on a day part and just the overall Again, the constitution you have and the focus that you have and the fortitude you have is what makes brilliant and great brands. So I commend you for it. You check a lot of boxes, I'll tell you, as far as what's on trend, what consumers want. And I think that's very, very admirable. So I guess keep up the great work. So
thank
now
you,
I have
Michael,
to have
but
a,
you know, I, you, hell, I, you know, I do read your material, and Quench does a really good job at the market research. I love the presentations you do. They're exciting, they're engaging, and they are full of a lot of tidbits of information that I can walk away with. So you guys do a great job of that.
I appreciate Sands. That's very kind. Now, but before I let you go here, I have one last question. You can't say one of your biscuits. So I'm going to steer you off your biscuits, right? You don't have to mention any other brands, but if you had one final meal, what would you eat and why? And maybe even where, if it's a special restaurant or a special place or whatever else.
One final meal.
Yeah.
My wife makes the best pepperoni pizza. And I've had a lot of pepperoni pizza, especially since, you know, growing up, we had a pizza restaurant. I would say that's it.
Well, maybe
it's,
one it, day.
It's very simple. Pepperoni, cheese, sauce, and a great crust.
We know history repeats itself. So maybe one day there'll be this thing where, I mean, your grandmother, gifted your father the biscuit recipe. Maybe one day your wife gifts the pepperoni recipe to one of your kids. And maybe it all comes back around, you know?
You never know.
Pizzaville reborn.
That's right.
With your wife's recipe. I love it.
Right.
That's awesome. Well, Bernie, you are fantastic as always. I really appreciate your time and thank you so much. And again, congratulations on such a great brand. And again, brands are built on promises. And I mean, your promises of fresh and love and all that just really comes through in everything. And that's very admirable.
All right. Thank you. Been a pleasure.